right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's time for another Red Ice interview. We are going to touch upon the extraordinary situation in the UK when it comes to the assault on free speech, the incredible censorship that we've seen over the last week with, of course, Selner, Pettibone and Southern being booted out of the country. This is not the first time, and we'll get into this later. Obviously, we touched upon this when Richard Spencer was booted out. He received a letter from Theresa May, not being welcomed back into the country. This has happened in the past as well. But our guest today to help us break this down and talk about the UK and just what a sad state the country is in is none other than Mark Collett. Thank you for coming back on the show, Mark. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me again. It's always a pleasure.
You bet. Thank you for coming on. And so let's just dive into this and talk a bit about what's happened here in the last couple of last week, really, or a little bit more. We had it really began. We could talk about first about with Jada Franson and the other gentleman from Britain First. They were actually charged with a hate crime. They received jail time. Last thing I saw of her was she was doing an interview. So I guess the sentence has not begun yet. But tell us about this and what happened in this particular case, Mark.
Well, this is completely scandalous, and this really highlights exactly how broken the British legal system is. Jada Franson and Paul Golding were sentenced to 36 and 18 weeks, respectively. So in total, they were sentenced to 54 weeks. And what were their crimes? Well, they were speaking out against Muslim grooming gangs. That really is what their party does. They protest, they raise awareness, they leaflet, and they're constantly banging the drum about the issue of the Islamization of the UK. And one of the big issues that we face is this grooming scandal. And of course, in the last few days, we've seen the news break of another one of these absolutely huge scandals in Telford. Now, they made a big issue during Paul and Jada's trial that they went to the house of a Muslim and they apparently abused his partner. They shouted abuse. I don't really believe they were shouting abuse. I don't know exactly what was said, but these people have been made out to be victims, and Paul and Jada have been made out to be aggressors. And this is absolutely absurd, because Paul and Jada went to the house of a man who was involved in a large-scale grooming and child abuse operation. These people were grooming young girls, they were taking them above a pizza shop in Kent, and they were sexually abusing them. Now, what we have here is a situation where the police and the establishment in the UK seem more bothered about prosecuting people for speaking out against grooming, prosecuting people for actually raising awareness of these horrific crimes, than they are dealing with these crimes. Now, we already know about Rotherham. We now know about Telford. We know about historical cases of these mass groomings. I mean, the first big case, and I was involved in this back in around 2004, it broke in a place called Keighley in West Yorkshire, which is a small town near Bradford. Now, Keighley was the first big grooming scandal, and it turned out there hundreds of girls had been taken by Muslim men, and they had been groomed, sexually abused, passed around. Some of them fell pregnant and ended up having children to their abusers. And that was back when I was part of the BNP, and Paul Golding, he was a figure in the BNP. Both myself and him have spent huge amounts of time highlighting these problems. And at that time, I was obviously prosecuted. I faced 8 counts of incitement to racial hatred for speaking out against grooming in Keighley. Now, since then, it's grown and it's grown and it's grown. And this problem has been exposed on a mass level. It wasn't just Keighley. It wasn't just an isolated issue. It has taken place all over the UK in towns and cities where there are sizable Islamic populations. And Paul and Jada have been two absolutely tireless campaigners. They have gone out, they have leafleted, they've had the strength and the courage to confront these people. They have gone to their houses, they have had demonstrations in places where these groups have literally wreaked havoc. where they have ruined the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of girls, thousands of British families who have been blighted by this. And it's amazing how the government is so desperate to prosecute Paul and Jada. And I'm sure part of that prosecution was motivated by the fact they were really catapulted into the limelight on an international scale, because obviously Donald Trump retweeted Jada Franson. But isn't it incredible that whilst the government wants to jail them, make a huge example of them, humiliate them, release their mugshots, incarcerate them, and there's also other charges pending against them over in Belfast, so it could be a case that they are released and straight away tried and jailed again on similar trumped up charges. But whilst they're being hounded and vilified and literally torn down in front of the public, the same government, the same establishment, the British state, is doing everything it can to cover up instances of mass child abuse and grooming by the Muslim population.
So let's tie this in and put this in context, Mark, in terms of what's happening with the newly exposed, these rape gangs, as you mentioned before. I mean, from Rotherham to many other towns, it's just been one after the other after the other. And here's the latest one now, Telford, that has come out. And, you know, there's BBC articles literally talking about white girls being specifically traded, you know, for sex. And the UK government, I mean, we have to put this in context. People out there have to understand that the way that not only Paul and Jada is being targeted, but also Selner, Southern, Pettibone, these people, Tommy Robinson, of course, he's in turn. They can't kick him out of the country yet, but if they could, they would. And they are worried about these people. They're worried about these, to a certain extent now, it feels like they're widening the net, like even less extreme, if I can put it that, people are being targeted for the UK's laws when it comes to hate speech. And if they're not a citizen, if they're not a United Kingdom citizen, they are either being barred directly before they've entered in, or after they've entered in, they're literally being booted out. And this is what your country is worrying about. What is happening? How do we explain this?
Well, the first thing to bear in mind, obviously people are up in arms about Martin Selner and Brittany not being allowed in the UK, but it's very interesting to see who is up in arms. There's a lot of people flapping around like wounded pigeons over this and squawking rather loud, as if this is something that's completely unprecedented, as if it's something that's never happened before. Now, the UK has a really shameful record of this kind of thing. And it's very, very important to highlight the fact that Richard Spencer, Matthew Heimbach, Michael Savage, Pamela Geller, Don Black, David Duke, they've all been banned at one time or another for entering the UK. So's Geert Wilders. Geert Wilders, although his ban was overturned, he was banned for some time from entering the UK. So this is nothing new. And this has been going on for decades. George Lincoln Rockwell was banned from entering the UK in 1962. This is something that the UK has been doing for a very long time. And it's not just about banning people from entering the UK. We have extremely restrictive laws on speech. There are numerous people who have spoken out against grooming, who have spoken out against mass immigration, who have spoken out against other negative facets of Islam, who have spoken out against Jewish power, who have all been imprisoned or tried. I was arrested, as I said earlier, and put on trial for 8 counts of incitement to racial hatred. Nick Griffin, he was arrested and put on trial for 4 counts. He got a suspended sentence earlier for speaking out against Jewish power in a magazine called The Rune. Tommy Robinson, he's been sent to jail. He's been physically attacked, and the police have literally turned a blind eye to it. He gets harassed constantly. We know about Jada and Paul, but patriots and nationalists have been repeatedly targeted. People have had their houses raided. There's a lady called Alison Shablow. I don't know if you've had her on here. She writes satirical songs about issues like the Holocaust, and she's currently on trial for writing a satirical song, just a little song that she plays on a piano and sings along to. And she is currently on trial for doing that, for essentially making a joke. There's a guy from Scotland who taught his dog to do a Nazi salute. And he was on trial in Scotland. I don't know what the outcome of that case was, but he was put on trial for simply making his dog do a Nazi salute. I mean, this is how absurd the laws are in the UK. But the thing that's annoyed me about this, obviously, I am not happy that Martin and Brittany weren't allowed in. That's not good. That shows how badly the UK government are, well, how desperate they are to stop any form of freedom of speech, how desperate they are to stop freedom of association. But something that's really annoyed me about this, and there's all these people now like Stefan Molyneux who are going into this mad fluster over this as if it's something new. But these same people were very quiet when it was Richard Spencer or Matthew Heimbach. They didn't say anything. And one thing that I want to highlight is it's not just bad when it's a good-looking young couple. It's bad when it's anyone.
Of course.
Freedom of speech doesn't just apply to relatively attractive young girls from America. It applies to everyone. It applies to Richard Spencer. It applies to Matthew Heimbach. It applies to Don Back, David Duke. It applies to Pamela Geller, Geert Wilders. All of these people have had their rights infringed. And there's a huge list of people not allowed into the UK. And yes, it's right that we are outraged at the treatment of Martin and Brittany. But equally, we have to be outraged and we have to bang the drum when it happens to anyone. And something that's kind of got under my skin a little bit is these people who are outraged about the treatment of Martin and Brittany, they didn't seem to be outraged when Paul and Jada were slung in a jail cell for tirelessly trying to expose these grooming scandals. And also there's quite a lot of timing here as well. Doesn't anyone else see the timing? The fact that Paul and Jada get sent to jail, then it breaks in the news about this other huge grooming scandal. It's almost as if
like
this was perfectly timed to almost say, well, actually, yeah, there is a grooming problem, but come on, you nasty far-right protesters, you're just as bad. This has been done to silence them at a crucial point, because if anyone deserves to be out on the street now, walking around and saying, look, we warned you about this, it's Paul and Jada. They've earned that right. And I know we don't want to be the politics of I told you so, but the fact is we did.
Yeah,
we warned
that's right.
people.
That's right. Where do people think this is going to lead in the future? I think, you know, I listened to a video by Lauren. She was talking about how this one young white guy was basically kicking her out. And apparently he said like, au revoir, you know, like bye-bye. And I believe maybe it was Brittany that tried to talk with one of these guys and saying like, hey, don't you get what you're doing here? Like, don't you understand what this is leading? And it was like, well, I'm afraid of losing my job or something like that. Apparently he had said, you know, and it's like, where do these young guys, these young white guys think that when either it's Islam or whatever other culture ends up dominating not only London, but the majority of the state apparatus in the UK, that these people are going to have their jobs left? Where are their children going to be? These are the initial steps of a takeover where, at least in London at this stage, the authorities are far more concerned with upsetting Islam or anyone of the Muslim faith than anyone that's Christian, right? I mean, Lauren was asked, how do you feel when Muslims are run over by a car? You know, are you a Christian terrorist? Do you want to bomb mosques and stuff like this? I mean, bizarre interrogation processes when they're actual real crime, as you say, happening on the other side of the spectrum that these people are trying to warn about. And what happens is that those that bring the message, as usual, those that carry the message of saying, watch out because this is coming. And as it's coming, those are the ones that are being arrested. It's just so aggravating to see this.
Well, the UK Border Force is a complete joke. Well, in fact, well, not a joke because it's not funny, is it? They're just a complete disgrace. The UK Border Force are responsible for something like 200,000 illegal immigrants slipping into the UK every year. So they're letting these illegal immigrants slip through, each and every year, hundreds of thousands of them. And the percentage of these people, a large percentage, in fact, have sympathies with ISIS. They have extreme Islamic views. They pose a huge threat to the UK, but they can capture these two in the net and turn them back because it's these two who pose the real threat, according to them. And that's absurd. But what's more absurd is whilst Amber Rudd and the Home Office are so adamant that this young couple posed a threat to UK security, the same Home Office, the same British state, is proposing to give free council houses or priority council houses to returning ISIS fighters to help them reintegrate into UK society. So people who left the UK, they went abroad to fight for a violent extremist terrorist group which has committed some of the worst atrocities the world has seen in the last few years. And they are going to be welcomed back. The red carpet is going to be rolled out to them, for them. And they're going to be essentially bribed to be good boys with free council houses, priority council housing. And that same government that wants to roll out the red carpet for ISIS fighters is clamping down on a couple of youngsters who have never committed a crime in their lives. They're not drug dealers. They're not hardened criminals. They're not criminals of any kind.
No. They're thought criminals, right? That's what it's
thought criminals. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. But on the plus side, this has been great publicity. On the plus side, this has been something that has thrust both Brittany and Martin into the mainstream press, into the limelight. And that's something I'm really happy about. Now, I wasn't so happy about their original plan. I think if they'd have managed to get into the UK, if they'd managed to make their speech at Speaker's Corner, I think there could have been chaos. And people who are probably shaking their head thinking, what am I saying? Well, go to London. London is already majority non-white British. It's already overwhelmed with migrants. There are virulent Muslim extremists in London. There are Black Lives Matters mobs. Every time there's a Notting Hill carnival, there's usually a riot and there's record crime rates. It's a left-wing sort of Antifa hive. And had they been let in, I think there would have been trouble. And I think then there would have probably been negative headlines about nationalists. So I think really here, the government, by acting in such a tyrannical manner, it's denied Antifa the sort of, well, what can I say? They have the right to riot. They're given the right to riot by the UK state. So it's denied Antifa their right to cause a riot. It's denied the press the right to blame that riot on us. It's denied the left, Muslim extremists, Black Lives Matters, the right to punch two young nationalists in the face, because that's what happened. It's what happened to Sargon the other week. It's happened to Tommy Robinson the other week. And when it does happen, the police are very, very slow, if not completely reluctant, to actually arrest any of these far left thugs or Black Lives Matters supporters or Islamic extremists. The police are more or less allowed to turn a blind eye and let nationalists get attacked. So really, this has worked out very well for us. You know, I think the British state have shot themselves in the foot, and, you know, no disrespect to Martin or Brittany. You know, I've met them both. They're really nice people, but they're not fighters. They're not like Tommy Robinson. If he'd said he was going to turn up somewhere and people were going to come and attack him, he would probably relish that. He's a very handy guy. There's footage of him on YouTube recently knocking out a African migrant in Italy who tried to touch one of his camera crew. But Martin and Brittany aren't like that. They're quite intellectual. They're very good speakers. They're very mild-mannered. And the last thing I wanted was for them to come in here, end up at Speaker's Corner, get attacked, get hurt, you know, there'd be a big riot, and then us get blamed. So I think the UK state, through their own tyranny, has actually done us a major favour. They have averted something which would have probably been quite disastrous and been blamed on us. And it's made us look like the victims, we have been seen publicly to have been having our free speech denied, our freedom of association denied, and the UK state have shone a light on their own ludicrous policies. The whole world can now see that the UK state views two young people who aren't violent thugs, who aren't criminals, as being a greater threat than they do ISIS fighters. And that really shows what a state Britain is in. And for that, I think Martin and Brittany should be congratulated. You know, by being stopped, they have probably pulled off one of the greatest publicity coups we've seen. And we've seen a few in the last year. You know, obviously I talked about Jada being retweeted by Donald Trump. That was phenomenal. And this has been phenomenal. So all in all, I do think this has been a reason for us to rejoice. I think this has been a major coup for patriots, for nationalists. I think that it's made a lot of people in the UK who weren't previously thinking about the problems faced by people like myself, Paul, Jada, you know, nationalists in the past, Richard Spencer. They weren't really focused on that because people weren't talking about it. But now people are being forced to talk about it. So at the very least, this has got people talking. And best case scenario, I think it's got the right people talking. The fact Nigel Farage has finally been forced to talk about issues of freedom of speech is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. So a few things there. The first of all, as you said, the widening of the concern is obviously it is annoying because it's like, wait a minute, where were you guys when this happened to others? You know, at the same time, that's kind of how things seem to unfold and unfurl. You know, you get a trickling outward, if you will, of people who have been less engaged in these kinds of topics. But Molyneux, he kind of jumped on the, pro-Western at best kind of point of view a little bit late. So it makes sense that he would kind of bridge out to these kinds of issues a little bit late as well. But exactly, just that they need to be aware of the fact that this is not something that's new. This has been happening for a long time. And I guess what I would like to see at this point is not people saying, oh shit, stay away from the UK. It would be the opposite. People should, at this point, arrange more conferences. They should do more speeches. They should engage effectively in a peaceful way, obviously, but with the UK government to further expose exactly where their allegiances lie and what they consider to be top priority when it comes to security and national security. And show them that they're more concerned, as you say, with young identitarians, nationalists, conservatives, right-wingers, than they are with existing ISIS fighters and real convicted terrorists that are already within their country. I showed a couple of headlines earlier where they are doing independent reports and coming to the conclusions that anywhere between, like, you know, 200 and 400 returning ISIS fighters are in the UK right now. As far as I know, they're not being hunted down. There is a tremendous amount of, you know, resources being spent on anti-terrorism, but this has come full circle now. And we can, I remember saying this many years ago. I said, when this anti-terrorism bullshit comes into effect, it is going to be for us, not for anyone else. It's going to be for white people. It's going to be for, you know, what they consider to be white terrorists or something like that, or Christian terrorists. I don't know what they're going to dub it, but that has, you know, that's actually beginning to happen right now. And they turn a blind eye towards existing Muslim extremists, but they completely hone in on us and their security system, their intelligence services is basically about hunting us and finding connections between people. And, you know, oh my God, Pettibone, you know, spoke with this person at one point and Sellner is connected through this person. And, you know, you can see the government is drawing up their little, you know, maps with red lines connected between them and stuff like that, like a conspiracy theorist or something. But again, it shows where their allegiance lie. It shows that this is their concern. They don't give a one iota about, you know, Islamists or Muslim existing terrorists. So what do you think the proper response to this is? Do you agree that we should have more speeches, more conferences, etc., that exposes the government's agenda? Would that help in this situation, do you think?
Definitely. I think that we should invite as many controversial sort of nationalists, patriots, right wingers, for want of a better term. I don't really like that term, but I'm going to use it here. We should invite as many as we can to the UK. So the UK government just looks absolutely ridiculous for stopping so many people from coming in who just want to come here and talk about freedom of speech. I think the other thing that we need to do, and this is something that people seem slow to grasp the nettle about. Everyone wants to sign petitions. They want to talk about it on Facebook. They want to leave, you know, angry face emojis when things like this happen. And I hear a lot of people saying, you know, we need to protest. We need to try and pressure the government. That's not going to work. The only way we are going to change things here in the UK is not by influencing these politicians. You can't influence people who hate you to do the right thing by you. The sheep can't influence the owner of the slaughterhouse not to go about his duty of slaughtering them. The only way they win is by breaking free or getting rid of him. And what I'm saying is we need to engage in the political process and we need to replace the people who are in power because they're replacing us. They're not just silencing us. They are taking away all of our fundamental rights with the aim of replacing us, with doing away with the indigenous people of these islands. And it's either going to be us or it's going to be them. We're either going to depose these people and replace them and take the power back, or we're going to complain about it online and we're going to have lots of protests. But when those protests fade away, once the last chant has been heard, once the streets are clear again, it'll all be hot air and it'll be gone. We need to form something radical, cohesive, where we bring people together. People like Tommy Robinson, people like Brittany and Martin, they need to come together with other people. People like Richard Spencer, people like Mike Enoch, people like David Duke, people from across the spectrum, because we're all having our freedoms curtailed. We need to come together. We need to work together. And if the media attack us for working together, well, screw them. Middle finger up to them. We don't care what they think, because we need to build something where the whole of the right unites under some kind of electoral banner where we can start working together like a machine to get rid of the people who want to get rid of us. Because otherwise, this is only going to get worse. And unless we have a way of actually changing things and implementing policy ourselves, nothing's ever going to get done. It's like with Brexit. People keep saying, oh, well, Brexit's won, Brexit's won. All we've got to do is wait for the people who didn't want Brexit to make Brexit happen. The reason Brexit isn't happening is because the people who have been left to implement it never wanted it in the first place. That's why there will never be change about immigration. Immigration, the popularity of our current immigration system is at an all-time low, but the politicians don't care because they want it. They want mass immigration. They want the replacement of the indigenous people of these islands. So to them, it doesn't matter. And unless we start replacing those politicians with people who actually care, with people who actually value freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of association, then these problems are going to keep getting worse. And yes, it is important to invite people from all over Europe and America to highlight how ridiculous the system is. But we also have to undertake the difficult task of smashing that system and replacing it with something viable that acts in the interests of our people.
Absolutely. I mean, this is just the initial steps, really, of exposing the existing. This is like we're the, what do you call it in Britain, the shadow government, right? We're in the position of critique. We want to expose what they're doing, how bad they're running government, how little they care, not only for British people, but for, foreigners coming to the country, other Europeans coming to the country, contributing to the political dialogue, adding things, you know, a diversity of ideologies being discussed. I mean, if Britain is a democracy, then what kind of behavior is this, really, if you come down and think about it, which shows that it isn't a democracy then. It is a totalitarian left-wing alliance together with the interest that we've seen from the Islamic factions within the UK, like the Sadiq Khans, right? I mean, these have you'd think a mayor wouldn't have that much influence or whatever, but he's garnered quite a bit of attention on the international scene just because he's the first like Muslim, open Muslim mayor in a big capital, in a major European capital. And he actually was, speaking of Sadiq Khan, let's pull up that article here. He actually was at South by Southwest, as usual, of course, you know, continuing the tirade against Donald Trump. But he was actually encouraging that the Silicon Valley, the tech companies like Twitter, like YouTube, Facebook, all these companies are doing, need to do more to crack down on hate speech. And what that means, of course, is that any opinions that are exposing the likes of Sadiq Khan, where his agenda really lie, those are the ones that he wants to put a clamper on, a damper on, and say, you have unacceptable opinions, we're not going to hear it. And this is, I mean, let's face it, this is how they take over a nation. This is how they take over one region at a time. These are colonies that are being set up where Western values no longer apply. And they're more concerned with Christians and white people and British people, English people, than they are with the Islamists within their country. So this is, they're beginning this process. They're stepping up now and initiating a charge against us where we can no longer have the old ways of how we used to do things with debating politically, having different opinions and working things forward. And it should be recognized that these people are ruthless when it comes to their own interest and pushing them above everything else and taking over as much as they can, at least for the time being, as they hold all this power. I believe, though, personally, Mark, and I want to get your take on this, that I think that they are overstepping their boundaries here, because this is exposing to the normies out there, the regular people. I hope that they come across this. I hope they see what's happening. And they're saying, you know, what world do I want to live in, right? Do I want to live in this left-wing Islamist kind of unholy alliance type of world, where probably the lefties and all these liberal ideas that they have are going to go out the window once the Muslims take over? Or do I want to stand up with those who want to represent Western civilization in all its form? And yes, there's a broad range of people there. Some are more extreme, if you will, or more you know, more hardcore about their beliefs. But there's some that are less hardcore. But nonetheless, at some point, these people are going to have to pick a side, right?
Exactly. People are going to have to pick a side. And the fact of the matter is, firstly, when we talk about picking a side, one thing I really object to is what I call the sort of the alt-light's false dichotomy, where they suggest that we have to pick between radical Islam and sort of degenerate Marxism. So we pick radical Islam and all the problems that go along with it, or we embrace homosexuals and all these kind of degenerate left-wing lifestyles, because that's what the West actually is. And there's plenty of conservatives that are actually trying to peddle that rubbish, and that is complete rubbish. We have a much better way. I don't want Islam dominating the West. I do not want young girls growing up to be groomed by Muslim men. I do not want female genital mutilation being the norm. I don't want acid attacks. I don't want Sharia law. I don't want people being forced to wear burqas. But equally, I don't want young boys and young girls going to school and being taught nonsense about being gender neutral or being transsexuals or being read to in drag queen story hour. All of that is equal degeneracy. I don't want gay adoption. I don't want gay marriage. Both of those things are twin evils that need doing away with. We need to embrace European traditionalism. We need to embrace the traditional family. We need to embrace traditional European liberties that put our people first. And if we can guarantee one thing, Sadiq Khan is not going to put our liberties first.
No,
Sadiq Khan is almost the crowning achievement of Islamic dominance in the UK. Because as you so rightly said, he was the first Muslim mayor of a major European capital. And here you can see what happens when a Muslim population grows in number. They act as a block vote. They all go out and vote, and they hold the key to power. Now, Sadiq Khan is a particularly interesting individual, because not only has he had links with numerous extremists and terrorist sympathizers, but he has also been someone who has been what I would describe as an apologist for terrorism. He famously said that terrorism was just part and parcel of living in a major city. Well, that's absolutely absurd. And the question I'd ask him if he was sat in front of me, well, are acid attacks something that are just part and parcel of living in a major European city? Because they are now in London, and they're not part and parcel of living in a major city. They're part and parcel of living in a major city that has been colonized by Muslims. You can now say that grooming gangs are part and parcel of life in Britain, but they're not really part and parcel of British life. They're part and parcel of a nation that again has been colonized by Muslims. And this is a man who is an apologist for all of these terrible things. And he is also a man that is desperate to attack anyone who wants freedom of speech. He is desperate to attack anyone who speaks out against the evils of Islam or Islamic extremism. He attacks Donald Trump. He attacks groups like Britain First. He attacks any form of immigration control or patriotism. And at the same time, he has shared platforms with people that even the British press call Islamic extremists. And this is the problem we've got. Now, when we talk about colonization, people think about an invading army. You know, if you think back to when Spain was known as Al-Andalus and it was an Islamic republic before it was reconquered, that is the kind of situation you've got here. But the conquest hasn't been by the sword. It hasn't been a military conquest. It has been a conquest that has been orchestrated by a shadowy internationalist clique that is in control of our political power. So, as you said, we've not got a democracy. We've got two parties who stand for exactly the same thing, and you get to choose the lesser of two evils. So people vote Conservative if they hate Labour slightly more, or they vote Labour if they hate the Conservatives slightly more. But whichever you vote for, you still end up with mass immigration. You still end up with Islamic conquest. You still end up with whites being replaced. You still end up with gay marriage, with transgender nonsense being spoken of in schools. You still end up with patriots in jail or being barred from entering the UK. And this is a really, really crucial point, because the government at the moment is a conservative government. This isn't the Labour Party that's jailing Paul and Jada. Right. It's not the Labour Party who are scandalously stopping two young patriots, two young nationalists from entering the UK. It's not the Labour Party that's jailing a middle-aged woman who sits at a piano singing satirical songs. This is the Conservatives. So when people say that democracy gives you a choice, no, it doesn't. Democracy has given us one option, and that is the death of the European people. And that is what we face now. And Sadiq Khan, as I said, is the crowning achievement for these people, because he is the embodiment of the way Britain has changed, it's been colonized. And this isn't like a little sleepy mill town where this has happened. This is London.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a recipe for how I think they're going to start doing things in other countries, in other towns and cities and capitals and stuff like that too. And I think what people need to keep in mind is that at the end of this, I mean, you're saying it's not by the sword, and that's true on the large scale, that it isn't by the sword, but it is by the milliliters of acid. It's by the knife. It, you know, they're small, but it's by the grooming gangs, right? There is a violent component to this underneath the conquest or the takeover. And I believe that that is something that's going to increase as well as they gain more traction, more control over the political system, as they just end up dominating demographically in some areas. And that is why we call these regions no-go zones in Sweden, because you do not go in there. If you do that, they will, you know, physically attack you with violence because you are in their territory, right? There's examples of this where they consider themselves, they don't want to have police services and ambulance services and fire departments even coming in because this is their regions, you know? So this is just more of what's coming. This is, you know, people have to understand, you know, think, follow through on this. You know, if we have any liberals or leftists out there that are watching and concerned more with us than they are with the Muslims or the Islamists or the left wing for that matter, just know that this unholy alliance is going to lead, I think, to a violent overthrow at the end of the day. And we're out here warning now and saying, this has to stop. We have to do something about this now. If we don't, where do you think your children are going to be? What kind of future are we offering them? What kind of world is it going to be? What kind of Europe will this be? Because, you know, that's our concern. We're not trying to impose our way on other people. We're just trying to preserve our own. And while our own is being attacked, while our own method of how we want to run society is being dismantled in front of our eyes, you know, these people are warning and shouting to the rooftops about what we're doing. But he must, though, Mark. He must speak to the success that we are having to a certain extent. I mean, why are they so afraid of two little girls? I mean, I think Dellingpole wrote a good piece for Breitbart, you know, where he's like talking about basically that they say yes to jihadists, no to free speech, right? And he has a tweet here. He includes like, which of these people pose a bigger threat to the UK, right? Is it Southern and Pettibone, or is it the returning ISIS jihadi fighters, right? And at this point, they are willing to take in the ISIS jihadists, the fighters, and they think we can reform them. We can give them, we just give them jobs and housing. Everything will be good. Don't worry about it. These girls, these two little girls, they're a bigger threat. What does it tell us? What message does this send?
Well, this sends exactly the message the establishment wanted to send. And the problem is, with our people, is a lot of our people are scared to speak out. And they see the freedoms being eroded, and they're wondering what to do. They're wondering what to do. And when we talked earlier, you were talking about the war not being by the sword. You know, it's a war of the womb. At the moment, it's a war of the womb, and they're keeping score in the maternity wards. And we're being wiped off the scoreboard. We're losing. And because of this transformation and our freedoms being taken away and the government being really in the thrall of political correctness and also in debt to a highly motivated and cohesive Muslim community, which holds the swing of power in many major cities and towns in the UK, they are absolutely terrified of two young girls coming into the UK and talking about these issues, because they don't want to upset these Muslims. These Muslims are the power brokers. You can go to some of these northern mill towns in the UK and you can see at election time who holds the reins of power. The mosques will empty and people will go out and vote how they are told. And their population votes in overwhelming numbers, whereas ours don't. You talk about tolerance and apathy being the last virtues of a dying society. And white people are apathetic. They are tolerant. And those two, they're not virtues, they're vices, are destroying us. And the government is so scared that anyone will come here and actually ignite a little bit of a spark that might get white people moving, that might get white people thinking, that might get the indigenous European people, people of European descent, off their bums doing something, that they're locking it down. But as I said earlier, they've shot themselves in the foot here, because this has been, whatever Martin or Brittany were going to say at Speaker's Corner, would not have had anywhere near as much impact as this has had. And it's almost like the more tyrannical our government gets, the more crazy they act over our freedoms, the more they try to repress us, the more people it's red pilling, the more people it's waking up. And I think that, as I said, I am annoyed that people like Stephen Molyneux or others didn't speak out on the behalf of Richard Spencer, because free speech isn't just for young girls. It's for everyone, you know, and these people should be talking about these other injustices, and we must highlight these injustices. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's Brittany and Lauren and Martin, or if it's Tommy Robinson, Paul, Jada, or anyone else. What matters is the fact that everyone has to come together, highlight these problems, and we have to build something that actually changes the political system and enshrines rights for people in the UK. Because you can actually see that, in a way, this is like the government implementation of Sharia law. The government is acting on behalf of the Islamic community here in the UK. It's acting on the behalf of people like Sadiq Khan, because they won't let people come here if they are going to criticize Islam. And when people talk about creeping Sharia, when people talk about Sharia courts, when people talk about a dual legal system, you have to scratch your head and ask, will these people actually need a dual legal system, or will the British legal system simply enforce Sharia law? Because really, when you're talking about the loss of liberties, when you're talking about the loss of people's rights of freedom to speak, freedom of association, Sharia law is one of the most repressive regimes you could think of. It really does infringe on a whole raft of rights. But that's exactly what the British government's doing now. If you like, this is British Sharia.
This is
the British state bringing in Sharia law on behalf of Muslim communities, and Muslim communities that are being exposed on a mass scale for committing horrific crimes against the indigenous people.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. It's perverse, and I can't believe that it's happening. At the same time, as we said before, this is what we've warned about all this time, and it's just, you know, is another piece of this puzzle that's coming into effect and coming into fruition, if you will. But Mark, we're going to take a break here just a minute or so, and then continue in the second segment here, second part. I do want to plug, though, The Fall of Western Man, your excellent book. Of course, people should follow you on Twitter at Mark Collette or Mark A. Collette. And you were in the doghouse for a little while. I think you're back. Are you back online on Twitter yet?
Yeah, I'm back tweeting. And for all those who missed me over the last 7 days, my heinous crime that got me silenced for an entire week was I detailed the historical occurrence known as the Haitian Massacre, where blacks not only massacred all of the whites in Haiti that had enslaved them or had been seen to wrong them in some way, but also slaughtered every single white man, woman, and child who had been sympathetic to them as well. So pointing that out, which is a historical truth that you can Google, and I actually quoted sections from Wikipedia, that was enough to get me banned for 7 days. So Sharia law is not just in effect here in Britain, but also on Twitter as well. We have a case here where every single social network is clamping down on the truth if the truth exposes the multicultural system in any way.
Indeed. The website also here, guys, thefallofwesternman.com. You can download a copy there. Of course, you can purchase a copy of the book. That's the best way to go, but people can also go to Amazon.com. It's available there, paperback. Pick up a copy, help out Mark so he can continue his work. It's very important. We need people like Mark and many others out there talking about this, tying together all the dots for us, making all the connections, being the activist that we need to bring attention to all these, you know, just incredible double standards, that the immense replacement project that's ongoing right now by the globalists. And that's what we have to do. I mean, this is, as you said before, Mark, I mean, this is a... It's not a game. This is not something we're doing because it's passing the time or because it's fun or even because we're like trying to antagonize people or make people pissed off or something. I mean, this is about the future existence of our people. This is the continuation of the European man and woman as we know them today. And the globalists are doing everything they can. I mean, they are about replacing us, and almost every day there's another another one exposing, if you will, themselves and slipping up of the tongue and talking about it openly, that, whoops, it's an experiment here, or, you know, this is what we need to do to prevent, you know, XYZ from happening again, or whatever it happens to be. So, guys, again, The Fall of Western Man is the book. Go over there, check it out, and also pick up a copy, obviously. But Mark, let's take just a quick little break, and then we'll be back in the member segment with much more with Mark Collette. So stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back. All right, guys, I just concluded the second part with Mark Collette in the members section. If you want to check that out, please head on over to redicemembers.com, sign up for a membership. That's the best way to support us. We don't have any sponsors or ads. We don't monetize on YouTube. We don't have any major funding behind us. We do this with your aid, and we cannot continue doing it without your aid. So please sign up and help us out, support us so that we can continue and bring you more of these shows. You know, Weekend Warrior, we do exclusive videos and a lot of other stuff as well for you at redicemembers.com. We have archives going back to 2006. We've covered a lot of different topics throughout our history, but of course, in the last few years, we've focused heavily, of course, on European identity and having a pro-European stance in order to stop what the globalists are up to. So if you want to check out the second part, we're continuing actually doing talking about the state of things in the UK, but we also go into some positive messages and basically what you can do to get involved and basically how you can improve and better yourself and what you can do to take part in this fight that we're currently involved in and how serious that is as well, because we're standing on the edge of the precipice of the last vestiges of Western civilization, and that is not going to be able to be upheld without European men or women. So we talk about the importance of that and also what you can do to join the fight, if you will, in the second part here with Mark Collette. So definitely check that out if you're interested. All right, folks, thank you so much for watching or for listening. We'll be back with more, of course. Until then, check out what we have for you in the member section. We'll see you on the other side of this break. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.